If you put studded tires on your car for the winter, today's the day they should come off in Oregon. California gives you the rest of the month of April. But this is a good time, April 1st, to take stock of your vehicle. Is something bothering your car? Are you hearing wobbles or whines where there should be hums? Our next guest has heard many of these over the years. Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive, and he's our partner in a monthly segment we call The Squeaky Wheel. In this context, you are the squeaky wheel. Give us a call or email to talk about automotive issues you've had or are currently having. Again, it's 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Zach, welcome back to the studio.
Thanks. Good to see you.
So we had been talking last month about that we got a good start on electric cars and realized that both of us were kind of in the learning stages here. It sounds like as much of society is as well with getting up to speed on electric cars. Have you had a chance to look at different kinds of chargers available out there?
Yeah, I have, and you're absolutely right about the learning stage. I realized in my research that I've got a whole lot more to learn, and it's going to be fun because it really is. It's happening all around us, and so I did read about the different types of chargers, and there's really three: level one, level two, and level three. And when you buy an electric car, it comes with its own charger, and that would be a basic level one charger. And the difference between the levels is the power available and the length of time in which it's going to take you to charge your vehicle. So depending on what kind of car you have, you would want to research, and you might be able to use a level two charger, which you'd have to purchase in the aftermarket world, and that would allow you to charge your car more quickly. And should take the same connector, and connectors are pretty universal for level one and level two. And then some cars have a level three charger, which allows you to charge very quickly, but many cars don't actually have the capacity to charge at that rate. So the consumer should be, you know, do some research before they were to buy a higher capacity charger.
The level three, about four times usual voltage, is it's like 400 volts or something?
I don't remember the specifics, but yeah, it can charge in an hour or less, where the basic level one charger was 8 to 15 hours of charge time. So it's more like a trickle charge that is likely designed for the commuter who comes home at 5 or 6 or 7 and after maybe getting some groceries after work and plugs the car in, and the car can plug for, you know, at least 10 hours overnight while it's sitting in the garage.
But this is a feature of electric cars. I mean, not just the difference in range with a gasoline-powered car, but the fact that there's going to be a longer resting phase because the car simply can't operate when it's not charged.
Right. Yeah, and so what I've noticed is, you know, obviously the Tesla, they seem to have the longest range, the largest capacity batteries, and they take a level three charger. And it goes along with their business goal. I mean, they're trying to dominate the electric car market, and they've put a ton of time and energy into it, and they've only ever built an electric car. They just started out with a huge advantage by never
focusing
having
just on that.
Yeah. So from everything I've been reading, they really, you know, it's a great car. Obviously, it's just very, very expensive. And you know, the range of electric cars are all over the place, so you can buy other electric cars that are, you know, $6,000, and that's a very affordable way to drive for the commuter.
We have an email here from somebody who wants to let us know that there is a group already in the region. It's the Southern Oregon Hybrid and Electric Vehicle Association, or SOHEVA. And we got an email from Cynthia letting us know about this. SOHEVA meets monthly at the Ashland Library. You need to see their website for current dates and times. It's a friendly group open to anyone interested in EVs, says Cynthia. And I was just looking at their website. It is SOHEVA.net. If you want to give a look at the Southern Oregon Hybrid and Electric Vehicle Association. And we can talk about something other than electric vehicles here, by the way. We are in our monthly segment, The Squeaky Wheel, with Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive. Give us a call with your car care issue, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And I know we were already planning on picking up the story on electric vehicles this month, but it got a further underscoring when a workmate drove up, or his wife drove up the other day to pick him up, in a plug-in hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am going, okay, so you have a gas engine, but you can also plug in and charge. You can run on just the electric engine for a long time, but there's gas too if you need it.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's a great concept. They're out there. They're not as common, but the marketplace is just changing so much and so rapidly. I think it, in the next 10 years, things are really going to shake out. But most manufacturers now have committed their engineering and production to producing a certain amount of their fleet as an electric vehicle. I think Volkswagen and Audi actually committed to producing all electric vehicles by a certain time frame, maybe 10 years down the road.
But I think that's right, yeah.
The Germans, as they often do, try to, they provide the cutting edge technology, and they're a little behind it. Again, Tesla's really set a whole new standard, and everybody's jumping on board now.
So for a non-dealer shop like yours, is there just not a lot of business with electric cars at this point? Is this the kind of thing where the dealers have kind of kept the zone to themselves? Like, we want to make sure you're bringing your first, 30,000 miles worth of checkups come just to us,
yep,
for your electric car?
Yeah, up until now, we really haven't seen a lot of electric vehicles. And honestly, I think we've only worked on two or three at the shop, and they were issues that were non electric motor or electric powertrain related. Again, my theory for the future, because it's a really valid question, if someone asks me, how do you feel about owning an auto shop with so much technology changing? And I do feel pretty confident that as long as the cars are rolling down the road, we're going to have some stuff to fix. The nature of the work and the type of work is going to be different, but the cars, as long as they're rolling and not flying, we should be okay.
okay.
I think of the Jetsons, and again, Audi wrote a letter of a memo, and it was an agreement with the government of Germany that they're going to produce a flying car prototype by 2022. So that's just a prototype, but that's a little scary for me. Other than that, we have worked on some electric cars, but it's just steering, suspension type of stuff. These cars still need brakes. They still have creature comforts inside. And so, for example, a lot of luxury cars now have climate controls in the seat.
Oh, sure.
So you have four seats with four different air conditioning and heating systems. That's just an example of added technology that didn't used to be there. And so the nature of the technician's work is certainly going to shift away from repairing internal combustion engines and more toward the electronic side of things and, mm-hmm, and the fancy frills and what we call creature comforts.
But the suspension, gadgetry. Yeah, but you mentioned suspension, brakes, steering, all these are things that shouldn't change from combustion cars to electric cars.
Exactly.
Just out of curiosity, because you brought it up, but what is it that makes the seats cool? I understand the heat part, but how do they cool your tushy?
They have plumbing, basically.
It is cold water. Okay.
Well, no, I don't think it's not cold water, but it's just cooling components.
Uh-huh.
I don't know much about the cooling seats because we haven't seen them yet. We're 3 or 4 years behind technology constantly in the independent world. And until they come into our shop, we don't brief ourselves on the technology until we need to.
Mm.
So until it comes into the shop and is broken,
uh-huh,
we don't really sit down and read or watch training videos on it until it's necessary, because there's just too much to absorb.
I appreciate you doing the research, though, so we can talk about it a bit here. This is the Squeaky Wheel on the Jefferson Exchange. Zach Edwards back from Ashland Automotive as we're talking about what's primarily about electric cars, but anything you have that doesn't fly, we are more than welcome to talk about here on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from John and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. So I had a question about the different ways of making an electric car. So a train, my understanding is, has a big diesel generator, and the motor of the train is electric. And the Chevy Volt had a similar thing. The gas motor drove the generator that powered the batteries. In the event that the batteries didn't have enough power stored to drive the vehicle, but for some reason they decided not to follow that model with the Volt, and it's gone. Is there anybody who is doing that generator powered by gasoline engine? it made more sense to me from an efficiency point. And if there isn't, why have they dropped that model or that idea of a generator powered by gasoline and an electric motor only for the vehicle?
Okay, good question about that, John. And you're right about the fact that that is how trains work. That the diesel locomotives actually have electric traction motors mounted on the axles that power. So it's basically electricity going to the traction motors that move trains, and not the diesels themselves. The reason, of course, and we get into this in discussion of torque with electric vehicles, is that you can't take an internal combustion engine down to zero RPM because it stalls.
Right.
But you can with an electric motor. Okay. That's the big difference. So are you aware of the connections between generator versus a gas engine actually powering the car directly?
No. And that's, you know, that's really in the engineering side of things from these manufacturers. I'm not sure why they would go away from that. But I might be able to talk more about it in a couple more months, because I'm about to learn a lot more about Chevy's products. I'm going to be working with someone who's probably going to be able to educate me quite a bit about the Volt and the Bolt.
You hired a tech away from somebody, is that right?
Well, we've got a new guy starting up here in a couple of weeks, and he has extensive experience with electric vehicles. He's electric vehicle certified, and so we're really excited to, you know, learn from him, see what he brings to the table. And so I'm excited to talk more about electric cars as we move forward on the show. But again, right now I'm, you know, just so much in the learning stages myself, and it's fascinating as I continue to read.
We have a couple more questions here on the phone. David in Medford, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange and the Squeaky Wheel.
Good morning. I've got a couple questions. One is about hybrid batteries. Zach, a few months ago you talked about equipment available to recharge hybrid batteries. My question is, what is the shelf life of a hybrid battery? I've got a Toyota Camry with 160 grand on it. The battery seems to work fine, but what can I expect out of it for life, and can I recharge it at what cost? And then secondly, the Chinese government is going in whole hog with electric vehicles and providing the infrastructure for charging them. And I noticed on a road trip yesterday when I pulled into a convenience place for gas, there was only one stall available for electric cars to charge. Could you make a comment about infrastructure and charging stations?
All right. Thanks for that, David. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, David. The first question about the battery life for the hybrids, I can tell you that it's pretty common for the batteries to exceed the expectations, life expectancy from actually the manufacturers. So for example, the Prius, probably the most common hybrid. We've replaced several batteries on Priuses or Prii. I'm not sure how you say the plural there. At the 250,000 miles, which is far longer than Toyota ever expected those batteries to last. We have seen some fail at the 150 to 170 range, but not very common. It's much more common for them to last well into the 200,000 range. A lot of the reason I think those batteries fail is the driving conditions, and so everybody kind of has their own different driving routine. But optimally for that battery, the types of driving would be a perfect combination of highway and in-town driving, which makes sense from an engineering standpoint. They probably built that battery to accommodate the most average driving. And so, yes, there's a way to recondition those batteries and recharge those batteries. I know that I've brought this up before, there's a technology out there that I've just been waiting to purchase, and I really should probably just do it. It would allow me to basically completely release the charge from the electric battery and then recharge it slowly. And by doing that two or three times, it in essence refurbishes the battery the best that you could refurbish a battery. So you're not replacing any parts, but you're erasing the memory of that battery and then recharging it to its full capacity. And by doing it a couple times, you're kind of breathing new life into that battery and hopefully extending the life of that battery. And so it's really a preventative maintenance for your electric or your hybrid battery.
So it's a full discharge recharge cycle.
Yeah, yeah. And then as far as the infrastructure, you know, I don't really know about our plans for infrastructure in the United States. I know there's a lot of incentives available, and if anybody was interested, there's plenty of information to read about incentives available. And so even as a business, I'm sure that you could put a charging station at your gas station or at your storefront, and you could, there's some incentives available. I don't know the exact dollar amounts of those, but there's going to be some investment required by the business owner too, you know, in hopes that you're going to attract electric car drivers to your storefront by having that charging station there. But having two or three, I could see, would probably cost a lot more money,
no doubt,
than just maybe having the one.
We had talked a couple times in the program about the West Coast Electric Highway, and I was just looking back at this again. The idea is to have fast DC charging stations every 25 to 50 miles along Interstate 5 and 99 in California and other major roadways in British Columbia all the way down to California. I don't see how far along this is just with a cursory look. So if you're involved with the Electric Highway and want to give us a call, then by all means, join the people calling in to talk to Zach Edwards on this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel, 800-838-3760. By phone, email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Patricia in Eureka. Welcome to The Exchange.
It's Patricia Ann.
Patricia Ann, sorry.
And I'm calling this because I have a Spark, an electric vehicle. I missed the Chevy part because I was talking to Erica. But I have a Spark, and I had one brand new in 2014, and we got extra solar when we got the car. So I always said that for $50,000, I got a vehicle and fuel for the rest of my life. And then the car was totaled in August last year, and I got a used one, which had been driven hard and put up wet and didn't charge, didn't have the range that mine did. At four and a half years old, my electric vehicle said 92 miles when it charged up that morning that it collided. And it sold at 82. So I thought 4.5 years, that's pretty good, you know? But this new one, the second-hand one I got, charged up to 67 the day I got it. And I'm like, whoa, where'd all those miles go? But it's really about how you drive your car. So anyway.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for that, Patricia Ann. Good to hear from you.
Thanks. Yeah, I agree. And as this technology continues to emerge, there's going to be more and more things that we learn and more ways we can optimize the life expectancy of these batteries. And it's not just back to your question, Jeff, about, you know, do the dealerships have the market on this or the manufacturers? And the answer is definitely not. There's a lot of people in the aftermarket world that are just like this electric vehicle group in Southern Oregon. They're amassing a ton of information and publishing that. And there's companies that are doing this too, for-profit companies that are building tools for me and my crew to use, and they're amassing a ton of information too. So I think, you know, it's kind of the Wild West in terms of electric vehicle technology right now, but it's all going to shake out, and we're going to end up in a place with a whole lot of good vehicles on the road, and it's just going to be totally commonplace. But right now, there's a lot of different stuff happening, and it's really hard to keep up with it. But yeah, I would think that this electric highway, that's the West Coast seems to lead the way in a lot of things in the United States, and that's a great example of it.
So let's take in a call here from Paul in Grants Pass, who may have some comment about that. Paul, welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning. Yes, the bottom line is that we're still, as you say, working our way through the growing pains with the electric car industry. And one of the problems has been standardization. The electric highway that went in essentially favored, at the time, the Nissan Leaf. The problem is that each vehicle has a proprietary charging system and a proprietary charging head. Now, there is an SAE head, which I believe the Spark and I would assume the Bolt used, but it's always dangerous making assumptions. At the time, though, it's totally different than the fast charges with the Nissan Leaf. So for me, with a Spark, I can charge in Grants Pass. I believe I can charge in at Seven Feathers up north. I used to be able to charge at Fred Meyer's in Medford, but I don't think they're maintaining the charger anymore, at least not enough to trust. So, Jeff, that's why I haven't been over to see the studio yet.
Oh, well, we're waiting for you.
unless you let me stay overnight at your house so I can recharge my car by plugging it into the wall. And this is the problem. The Leaf was heavily favored. I don't begrudge that to the state, because at that time that was the dominant forum and it made sense to do it. But we have to standardize. We have to standardize fast charging capacity for this to really take off. I talked with a fellow with a Bolt the other day. His effective range is about 200 miles. He's gotten over 300 out of it when he's been driving very, very conservatively. But around here, it's about 200 miles. And again, he has the same concerns in terms of that. The problem is a lack of standardization so far.
All right, Paul, thanks for raising that point.
Yeah. I think Jeff actually just mouthed over here to me that you can sleep in his garage in your car while you're charging your car. I think it's like the OBD2.
That's the April Fool's joke out of the garage.
I think it's very similar to when the, speaking of communication protocol or SAE protocol, Society of Automotive Engineers, you know, the OBD2 or OBD1 versus OBD2, same type of thing. That was the communication with the onboard diagnostic system of vehicles. And with OBD1, there was just very little protocol for universality. I don't know how you say that word, but
that is the way, yeah.
Yeah. And OBD2 became very standardized and it revolutionized everything. And
all right. So it's just a matter of like whichever one everybody coalesces around, they will get there, you think?
Yep. It seems like that's where we're at and probably just around the corner of having some more uniformity there. So,
all right. Cynthia Sohiva said forthmobility.org has lots of good information on EV infrastructure. You can also go to sohiva.net. Zach Edwards, The Squeaky Wheel, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jeff.